The finale of the Synod on Synodality is right around the corner, and Pope Francis makes headlines about other religions and salvation as the Vatican issues a new ruling on a Marian apparition site, Medjugorje. The Papal Posse, Father Gerald Murray and Robert Royal react to those stories and much more. Then comedian, author, and free speech advocate Rob Schneider joins me exclusively to talk about his new memoir, You Can Do It. The World Over begins right now.
Now, Raymond Arroyo.
A warm welcome to all of you joining us in the United States and the world over. If you'd like to comment on tonight's show, send me an X post. I'm at Raymond Arroyo, also on Instagram at Real Raymond Arroyo. Lots to cover. Let's get started. Pope Francis made headlines this week on everything from how we should vote to which religion will lead us to God, and it may not be the one you think. And the agenda of the next edition of the Synod on Synodality was released this week. Here with analysis of that and much more is the Papal Posse, editor-in-chief of thecatholicthing.org, Robert Royal, with me on set, and canon lawyer and priest of the Archdiocese of New York in New York, Father Gerald Murray. Thank you both for being here. Glad we could get together. One of these days, Father Jerry, we're going to get you back to the set. I think I'm going to have to hold you hostage, but we're going to do that. I want to start with Pope Francis's comments at an interreligious meeting he attended in Singapore. Here's what he had to say about interreligious dialogue and religious diversity on September 13th. Every religion is a way to arrive at God. There are different languages to arrive at God, but God is for all. There is only one God, and each of us has a language to arrive at God. Sikh, Muslim, Hindu, Christian, they are different paths. Father, then Bob, as is his custom, this is one of those airborne news conferences, or as I like to call them, plain confusion. How is every religion a path to God? And do the Aztecs know, Father?
Well, this is a statement that is really unacceptable. Let me just read a brief quote from the year 2000. St. John Paul II issued a document called Dominus Iesus, and he said the following. It is clear that it would be contrary to the faith to consider the church as one way of salvation alongside those constituted by the other religions. So we don't have multiple ways to get to God, multiple religions willed by God. No, Jesus Christ said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. And the church teaches that there's only salvation in Christ. Therefore, other religions represent a human attempt to find out about God. But Christianity is the religion revealed by God and gives us the truth to know what we're supposed to do. So the Pope's talk here is misleading in the sense that it's giving the impression to people who aren't Christian, you don't need to convert in order to be following the path that God gave to the world.
Yeah. Bob, this sounds, at least to those on the outside, those not in the Catholic Church, like the Pope is embracing the Joseph Campbell view of the world, which is, you know, all the languages, the different faces of the same story, the same God. Does that comport with the Catholic tradition?
Well, you know, the odd thing for me is that he could have saved this commentary very easily. It seems to me that he could have said to them, look, you know, naturally we are Catholics. We believe that the fullness of the truth exists in the revelation that Jesus Christ and the Lord has given us, and that we hope that others... We can live in harmony and peace with others. We don't need to fight over these things. We hope we can live with them, and we can help them towards the fullness of the truth. And then we could have talked about the different languages and whatnot. I don't know that that's the best image to use. But the sense that this gives, I think, to the world, to the people you're talking about who are outside of Catholicism, is that the Pope himself doesn't feel any sense of urgency about Christian evangelization. Now, you know, people have been trying to say we ought to cut him some slack. It's young people. He's speaking off the cuff. Yeah. You know, it's a small group. But do we really want to send out that message at this moment in history? I mean, there are places where there are strong religious conflicts. I don't know that Singapore is one of them, actually. Mm-hmm. But I think the greatest urgency for a Catholic, for even a Christian at this point, is to preach the gospel to the whole world.
Well, and Father, look, anytime there's a camera around, those comments, whether you got 10 people in front of you or 100,000, they're going to get broadcast and they're going to hit ears new and already a part of the Catholic faith. And not everybody's going to have a theological degree. So precision is needed. A few days later, on September 17th, in a video message to young people attending another interreligious gathering, Pope Francis revisited this theme, saying the following. Unity is not uniformity, and the diversity of our cultural and religious identities is a gift from God. Unity in diversity. Father, he seems to be doubling down on earlier statements about religious diversity having the same goal. Does the Church no longer teach that unity is found only in Christ?
Yes, the Church continues to teach that, of course, because the truth is the truth. It's indivisible. It can't be shared in the sense to say, well, Catholicism is true, but so is your religion's true, and you contradict us, but you're still true for you. No, religious diversity is another way of saying there's Christianity, Judaism, both revealed religions. Christianity fulfills the hope of Israel. But then the other religions are not revealed by God. This is not the case. We do not say that Buddhism was willed by God, and therefore people who are Buddhist should stay Buddhist. You know, Christ said, go out and preach the gospel and baptize all nations. The call to salvation is universal. So to say that God wills that other people don't follow Christianity is, in fact, contradictory to what Christ himself said. He said, come, follow me. Mm-hmm. I am the way, the truth, and the life. He didn't say, go follow Buddha or other religious leaders.
Yeah, it does promote a certain confusion, Bob. I mean, I got more emails about this from non-Catholic folks saying, wait a minute, so we can find salvation, we can find God down other paths, other languages? It is confusing.
Yeah. And look, it isn't impossible to imagine that somebody else in another religion says, hey, wait a minute. You know, I mean, a Muslim might say to us, wait a minute. We don't think that yours is just another language. You guys are wrong. You idolize Jesus.
Right.
You think that God could become a human being. That's impossible. You venerate his mother. That's impossible as well. Or a Buddhist might say, well, wait a minute. That's an illusion. It's an illusion. There are Buddhist sects that do believe in a God. There are others that don't believe in a God, that think that believing in a God is kind of limitation on your spiritual life. So, you know, it's actually a kind of imperialism, it doesn't present itself way, but it's kind of saying, we in the West all try to get along with one another, so you're just other languages.
But decide every religion is a way to arrive at God. Wiccans? I mean, it's just not true. It's not true. Their focus is something other than the triune God. And that triune God is exclusive within multiple religions, established religions. Archbishop Charles Shapiro wrote a column this week in First Things, addressing the Pope's remarks, and I want your reactions to this. He said, the Bishop of Rome is the spiritual and institutional head of the Catholic Church worldwide. This means, among other things, he has the duty to teach the faith clearly and preach it evangelically. Loose comments can only confuse, yet too often confusion infects and undermines the goodwill of this pontificate. Father Jerry, I'll give you the first crack at that. This sentiment really has been expressed throughout Pope Francis's pontificate.
Yeah, I mean, the Archbishop Chaput is a wonderful spiritual leader. He's a retired archbishop, but he continues to exercise the teaching role of the successors of the apostles. And he's absolutely correct. When the Pope says this, he's repeating something he signed years ago, the Abu Dhabi Declaration, saying that God, all religions are willed by God. This is not a new theme of his. At that point, he told Archbishop Schneider, well, it's the passive will of God. But if he keeps repeating it, I don't think it means that, well, you know, God allows it to happen the way he allows earthquakes to happen. No, he's saying that God wills the diversity of religions. It's simply not the case. If Jesus Christ is not the Savior of the world, simply one other approach, Well, then people are going to say, well, I want the religion with the least rules, and I want the religion with the least amount of sacrifice, or I want the religion where I only have to go to worship when I determine so. No, the true faith is the Catholic faith given to us by Christ, to the apostles, and we're the beneficiaries of that. So I think the Pope has fixed ideas about this. I would love for him to actually get into a theological discussion with people like Bishop Athanasius Schneider, Cardinal Muller, Cardinal Burke. I mean, this needs to be hashed out, because the impression given to people is Catholicism is not serious anymore about converting everybody. Mm. But in fact, that's the central mission.
Bob, your reaction to this?
Yeah, you know, I've said before that there are two people on the face of the earth who need to be absolutely clear in their words always, in every circumstance. One is the President of the United States, who can start a nuclear war.
Yes.
And the other is the Pope of Rome. And at a time when the Church is clearly reeling, I mean, one of the reasons why this synod and synodality is there is to try to find some way to present the faith in these changed circumstances, these postmodern circumstances in which we find ourselves, to give the impression to people that the Church somehow doesn't affirm itself. It doesn't have to be militantly assertive against people.
Right.
But affirm itself in every single place that it appears, that Jesus is the one answer to the mystery of the human being. And I mean, this is the teaching of Vatican II. If we want to talk about number 22 in Gaudium et Spes, it says that God explains the human being to himself. And so without that, we're not helping people by telling them that we're all on a journey together. We need to tell them that one truth, that God decided to come into the world to actually send a message to us that we desperately need.
Well, we're going to talk about the synod, but Bob, as you were talking, I brought to mind the people who had the deepest spiritual impact on my life, the people who converted me and those I know. It was often someone living a saintly life. That the power of an individual witness, Father. The synod could probably save itself a heck of a lot of money if it wanted real evangelical power. Go to illicit and beautifully done mass, the mystery and the power of experiencing that, and then get people in front of saints. I mean, I knew Mother Teresa. I knew Mother Angelica. We knew John Paul II. The power of these people when they walked in the room, when they spoke to you directly, it was like God speaking to you. And I think somehow we've forgotten all of that. We're looking for some process or an institution, or we're going to have a table speak in a synod, and that will help lead to evangelization. Will we get there that way?
We'll get there the same way the apostles got there. You know, go out and preach the gospel. One of the most outstanding cardinals in the Catholic Church is Robert Sarra, who is the retired prefect of the Dicastery for Divine Worship. He's written beautiful books about doctrine. He's preached. He travels. He's not at the synod. He should be. Mm. This man speaks with a prophetic voice. There are many others. You know, our brothers and sisters in Africa are showing us in the West that we've become very secularized in our outlook. And this bureaucratic mentality, there are about 370 delegates at this upcoming synod.
Yeah.
How in the world can that number of people actually conduct in the course of a month something that's going to be attractive and convincing to people? It's essentially going to be a bureaucratic enterprise.
Yeah.
You're right, singular figures. That's what we need.
Yeah, well, and we're going to get into that. Who's invited, who's not invited to this synod. But, you know, as you mentioned, the church in Africa, Father, the reason they're growing, the reason they're so powerful in their witness, martyrdom, suffering for their faith. They do that daily. They're burning down churches and they're hunting down clerics. This is the lived reality of parts of Africa. We in the West have become numb to that experience and frankly just stand aside and give up our values and our dearly held beliefs because it makes us uncomfortable if somebody says they're going to cancel you. Let's talk about this upcoming synod. Bob, in October, the second part of this exercise will begin. An update on the agenda and participants was released this week. Before the synod begins, it was announced that participants will gather in a retreat and hold what is being billed as a penitential celebration led by Pope Francis, according to the Secretary General of the Synod. In this communal confession of sorts, participants will confess sins in the name of all the baptized. Here are the number of suggested sins to be confessed straight from the official document. You ready? Sin against peace, sin against creation, sin against indigenous populations, against migrants, sin of abuse, sin against women, family, youth, sin of using doctrine as stones to be hurled, sin against poverty, and my favorite, sin against synodality, lack of listening, communion, and participation of all penitential celebration in St. Peter's Basilica. That's what it's being billed as. Bob, don't we need to know what something is before we can confess it as a sin? I mean, what is a sin against synodality? I don't know what that means.
Well, one of the interesting things is it's self-contradictory, because we keep asking, what is synodality? And they keep telling us that synodality is a process.
Right.
By which we include everybody, we welcome everybody, we listen to everybody. But if someone comes along, as actually happened when the synod organizers put out a tweet, or I guess we call it an X
message. Yes, X post.
Now, they asked, you know, do you think that the synod will help us, you know, better convey the faith? Like 90%, almost 90% said no.
I remember that poll.
But listen, I mean, this is a very serious point. If you're going to be open to every point of view, and someone says, well, wait a minute, you know, we're involved in this navel-gazing, and maybe this wasn't the best way to go about it. Even if you grant that what we want is to walk together, maybe this isn't how can it be a sin to make a statement that is supposed to be welcomed by synodality?
Right.
And all the others, I have to say, when I first saw that letter that they sent out, someone suggested that it might be a hoax.
That's what I thought when I first read it. I thought it was a joke.
And you say, well, wait a minute, a sin against, they're going to confess for us, you know, well, the sin against creation. Well, you left the air conditioner on too long. I mean, I don't know what those sins could possibly be unless you're a callous polluter who owns a company.
Is every Hispanic border agent, many of whom I've met down at the border, in Eagle Pass and some of these places along the southern U.S. border, are they all engaging in sin against migrants because they're fulfilling the law? Where you didn't have permission to come, but you came, and I have to, you know, say sorry. You have to go back and get in line. Is that a sin? I guess it is. Father, this newfangled, it seems any opposition to this newfangled agenda is a sin. I mean, if I don't want to talk about female ordination, I guess we're engaging in a sin.
Well, this is the politicization of the examination of conscience. I mean, this basically could have been a review of a political agenda for a political convention. And by the way, where's sin against the truth? Because it says sins of abuse. Well, wait a minute, they left out the words sexual abuse of minors. And what about the sexual abuse of women religious? The Rupnik case is still staring us in the face. A man who is credibly charged with sexually abusing in a most vicious and horrible way novice nuns under his authority, he's still a priest in good standing. This is ridiculous. Now, as regards the rest of these sins, particularly against synodality, this is like groupthink. This is like 1984. If I don't think exactly what the leaders of the synod think about synodality, then I'm guilty of a sin. No, this is getting to the level of the grade school teacher telling children, I don't like the drawings you're making. You can only draw what I tell you to draw. No. We want freedom in the church.
Well, Father, there's before I leave this topic, and I want you to sign off on this first, what do you make of the entire new form of confession being proposed here? This kind of corporate penitential service with proxies confessing for all the baptized. I mean, what's next? Confession at Starbucks? You know, I send my kid through the drive-thru and he can confess for the whole household. Why not?
No, this reminds me of Soviet show trials or communist Chinese show trials where people get up and said, yeah, I did the following things because the leadership said I did. And even though I don't remember that I did them, I said I'm going to do it. No, you don't confess other people's sins. You can't confess on behalf of the rest of the world. You can do penance for other sinners. No, the idea that I'm confessing for all the baptized. No. Each baptized person will confess before God. This is turning religion into a plaything. I really object to this.
Yeah. Now, Bob, your final thoughts on this?
And look, if you just go run down the list the way you just did, and I really would encourage anybody who wants to understand this to go through that list. It's a list of sort of liberal, leftist, progressive causes, the climate, women, migrants, the poor, whatnot. What about the Catholic points of those of us who have sinned against the light? Who have not accepted fully what the church has tried to take us through traditionally. What about abortion? which I think is it kills as many people every year globally as all other causes. Why is that issue something that's not brought up? Family is kind of mentioned, but how about sins against marriage?
Yeah, we're going to get to that.
Yeah.
We're going to get to that in a moment. But look, I want to get your take also on this year's agenda and how the controversial issues, Bob, and you're on your way to Rome, issues like women's ordination, celibacy, LGBT issues, they seem to have been totally sidelined this Synod. As we now know, we've been reporting, these issues have been shifted to 15 study groups that were formed at the end of last year's Synod, which will continue to meet through June of 2025. Bob, your thoughts on these study groups, and do you believe this is where the real work of the Synod is going to be done, free of any bothersome listening to objections?
Yeah. Well, you mentioned I'm going to Rome, and I yes. have to say I'm not looking forward to the day-to-day.
Bring your Kevlar, pal.
Yes, because I think that that's going to be it's potentially dangerous, but it's also, I think, going to be a real grind, which it was last year when I was there. As well.
I won't send you with the Raymond Arroyo backpack. You won't have to bring that one, too.
But look, we're going to find out. I mean, you've raised an interesting question. We're going to find out in June if, in fact, we get definitive answers about those issues that you raised in June. Maybe it may go on even further. It may be that this is the old tactic of appointing a commission so that you never have to decide something, or it may be taking that out of the hands of the larger groups, because we have seen in the past synods going all the way back to 2013-2014 that they haven't quite delivered what was expected to be delivered. So maybe this is the way to put those off and get them by a certain subterfuge, or maybe it's just a delay tactic that we avoid having to come down one way or another in the meantime.
Father, I want to get your thoughts on the participants at this synod. There are not many changes, but Archbishop William Laurie will be replacing Cardinal Timothy Dolan this year. Dolan, of course, turned 75 in February, which could be an indication of the Pope's plans for the New York Archdiocese. Also, Pope Francis's personal choices to participate in the synod are significant. Cardinals Coco Palmiero, Supich, Wilton Gregory from Washington, McElroy from San Diego, and the unofficial Vatican Synodal mascot, Father James Martin. Father, your reaction to the cast list?
Well, the cast list is reliably in the camp of Pope Francis's way of thinking. Those who disagree with Francis really aren't invited. I know Cardinal Mueller's coming back, and that's a good thing. But I mentioned Cardinal Serra, one of the most outstanding cardinals in the church right now, not there. This is not good. And, you know, to a certain point, though, the members of the Synod now are spectators, because when the Pope created these study commissions, Raymond, what that really means is the important stuff is being discussed behind closed doors by handpicked in-house people. Mm. And they're going to make interim reports now to the synodal body. So I'm looking at the synodal body like a focus group. They're going to put trial balloons out and say, well, this is what we're thinking. What do you think? Mm. And then based on that, then they're going to make the final decisions. Really, this is, when you think about it, the Pope went from having a synod of bishops to having a synod of bishops and everyone else, and now it's going to be a synod of experts. This is the way, sad to say, the European Union functions. You know, they have a huge parliament, but everything gets decided by the European Commission. So this is not, I think, a fulfillment of what the member pope said, totos, everybody. Well, wait a minute. Everybody is now experts picked by the Pope and his subalterns.
Well,
the synodal members had no say in who became the experts.
I look forward to those 15 synodal group study groups, Bob, confessing their corporate sin against synodality, because they're not having an open conversation about anything. And we, the laity, the people who pay the bills, aren't allowed even to see what's happening, much less take part in those discussions. I'll give you the final word on this.
Well, hope springs eternal.
Oh, okay.
we can hope that there's enough disagreement among the people who are there that we won't. Ultimately, look, this comes down to the Holy Father.
It does.
And he's going to have to either decide to accept or reject the suggestions that he gets from them. They are strongly tilted in a certain direction. I don't think an outside observer, unlike us who are the papal posse, looking at what the people who have been appointed would say, oh, yes, that's openness to all points of view, to listening to everyone in the church. But let's wait and see.
All right. Hope springs eternal. I'm going to ready my my penitential pot of sins. I'm going to drop them in and burn them on my way home. As I mentioned, this story just broke. The DDF, the Doctrinal Office of the Vatican, with the assent of Pope Francis, granted approval for devotions attached to the Marian apparition site of Medjugorje. The Vatican recognized the spiritual fruits received there at the Queen of Peace sanctuary without making a judgment or declaration about the supernatural character of the apparitions themselves. The doctrinal head of the Vatican, Cardinal Victor Manuel Fernandez, signed the declaration. Francis approved it. Father Jerry, this has been in the making for years, but the Vatican goes through great pains to say the faithful can take part in these devotions, but it's not a proclamation that anything supernatural has happened there. Doesn't that undermine previous declarations from the Holy See at La Salette and Fatima and these other Marian apparition sites?
Yes. The Holy See has embarked on what I consider to be a completely erroneous way of dealing with the question of apparitions. And this goes back to a document that Cardinal Fernandez issued, I guess, about 6 months ago, in which he said it's not the purview of the Church to pronounce on the supernatural origin or not of any alleged apparition. Now, that was never heard of in the life of the Church. That's precisely what the shepherds are supposed to do. Mm-hmm. So now they're saying, we're going to prescind from saying whether Mary really is talking to these seers at Medjugorje. And we're simply going to say, since people go there and there are a lot of conversions and a lot of prayers, that there's good coming out of it. Now, wait a minute. If the seers are false seers, in other words, they either made it up or they're being deceived and under psychological maladjustment that's producing their being convinced that the Virgin Mary is talking to them, we need to know that. Because, of course, if you read that document, you'll also find out there are messages which are erroneous. Mm-hmm. The Virgin Mary is allegedly saying things that contradict Catholic teaching, and they say, well, the overall message is good, but we don't have to necessarily, you know, accept everything. Now, wait a minute. They're starting to make distinctions. They also said we're not going to talk about the moral life of the seers. Well, one of the criteria always for Catholic events is how does it play out in the life of those who are involved? Because if they were deceiving people and then they went off and lived a bad life, people would say, well, there you go. That's what happens if you engage in deception. So I'm completely unsatisfied by this. And the local bishop reiterated that the Church is not endorsing this as a supernatural occurrence. So in my book, if there's no supernatural occurrence happening there, the fact that people go there to pray, well, fine, I always like people praying, but let's not have people claiming the Church now says that Mary has been talking for 45 years to this group of seers, because the Church is not saying that.
Bob, this statement's a bit of a two-step. Yes, you can visit the shrines and the locations, but don't see you don't have to see the visionaries, the document says. And look, it says the statements of Our Lady of Peace are worthwhile, but not all of them. Why issue a statement at all, Bob?
I'm sorry to say, I think that this is one of those political decisions, because it seems like one way to, I think you have it exactly right. On the one hand, you affirm something that an awful lot of people seem to be
attached
to and benefiting from, yeah, frankly, right? Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, you kind of keep your powder dry and just say, well, you know, we can always deny, you know, certain things. For me, it's very interesting that they've kind of emphasized that they don't want to affirm the negative projections that maybe there is a dark future ahead in the world, which, uh-huh, by the way, if you're a secularist these days, when you see what's happening in Ukraine or in Israel and other places in the world, it's not exactly unrealistic to talk about some unfortunate things that look like they could actually happen.
Yeah.
So if Our Lady is warning us about that, as she certainly did at Fatima, I mean, I think Fatima, yeah, is one of the most obvious examples of Our Lady coming and warning us about what actually happened in the 20th century.
Yeah.
I think we've got to take that seriously and not approach these things as if they are somehow political, that we massage it. We kind of say yes to it, but we're not going to really endorse it.
Well, like Our Lady of Akita talking about Cardinal, and I mean, it's pretty clear she was on to something. I want to move on to Pope Francis's remarks on the U.S. election. Since we're in the heat of a very contentious campaign season here in the United States, not to mention being in the aftermath of a second assassination attempt on the GOP candidate, Donald Trump's life. The papal plane pressers are usually a goldmine of soundbites. Pope Francis said this on Singapore. He was asked about voting, how U.S. Catholics should vote in this important election. He said this, expelling migrants, not giving them the possibility of working, not welcoming migrants is a sin. It is grave. On abortion, science says that in the first month after conception, all the organs of a human being are already there, all of them. Performing an abortion is killing a human being. Whether you like it or not, this is killing. It is said that not voting is bad. It is not good. You must choose. And you must choose the lesser evil. Who is the lesser evil? That lady or that gentleman? I don't know. Everyone in conscience, think about it and do this. Pope Francis's statement there. Father, what do you make of the moral equivalency here? I mean, turning a migrant, even a criminal one, you know, with a criminal record, turned away at the border with the slaying of an innocent child.
Yeah, there is no moral equivalency between legitimate immigration enforcement and the killing of unborn children. We have to face the fact that those who are engaged as politicians in creating laws and enforcing them so that children die at the hands of medical doctors in the process of abortion, those politicians disqualify themselves to represent the people of this country who are interested in morality. You know, we live in a country now where you have freedom to vote. We should use that vote to elect people who are going to stop legalized child killing. Now, yeah, when the Pope says that, you know, you have to decide, it's not clear which is morally worse, I think it is very clear. And Pope Benedict, of course, when he was Cardinal Ratzinger, issued a letter to the American bishops regarding voting for candidates who are pro-abortion. So I don't know where this is. And by the way, about immigration enforcement, is the Vatican going to set up a tent city behind the walls because, you know, immigrants are entitled to stay wherever they arrive at? Of course not. There is no right to forcibly or illegally enter a jurisdiction and then claim the right to remain there. It's up to that country to decide what they're going to do. So, yeah. You know, hold the Vatican City has not become a refugee camp. But according to the Pope, if somebody got past the Swiss Guard, it would be a sin to throw them out. Yeah. That, of course, it isn't.
No. Bob, he said something else that I didn't read there. The Pope said both are against life, meaning both these candidates, be it the one who kicks out migrants or be it the one who kills babies. Both are against life, really?
Well, look, if we were really thinking like Catholics about these issues, mm-hmm. I mentioned earlier that abortion kills globally more people, right. Probably as many people as all other causes. Yeah. And this is willful. This is not just, you know, what happens right. In human life. So to me, that is a malum in se. It's an evil in itself, technically, in moral reasoning. When it comes to migrants, I would like to distinguish, and I never hear the Holy Father talk this way. In law and in fact, most migrants are seeking a better life. In other words, they're not under threat. You're not rejecting their lives. You're just regulating whether people can move from one place to another. People have estimated that something like one-third of the globe would like to move to the United States. That obviously cannot happen. The distinction here is this. Refugees, in law, need to be protected. In other words, if, you know, say I'm in Venezuela and the president is threatening to kill me, mm-hmm. and Spain decides to take me in as a refugee. Well, of course, you're protecting the life of that person. And now we're at least in the area where we're talking about obvious and immediate physical harm to somebody. Right. In the case of migrants, though, it's a desire, and it's a desire that needs to be regulated because otherwise no nation will function normally, as we're seeing here in the United right. States. We're seeing it in Europe, even in Africa, where there's a brain drain from, you know, one country to the next. We learned about this during the Synod on Youth, where some of the African bishops were saying, wait a minute, we don't want all our dynamic and energetic and intelligent people to be moving elsewhere. We need those of our own people to help develop our country as well. So, look, that's a very complicated question, migrants. Refugee status is a different thing that is a different thing in law and in moral.
But Bob, to be very clear, the church teaches a government, a nation, has a right and an obligation to protect, regulate immigration, protect its own people, particularly from harm or the dislocation in a community. We have very poor communities in the United States. I live in one of them. And when you bring more poor people in, the citizens are being disadvantaged because they're now in competition for the same services, and those services are not unlimited. I'm sorry, they're not. So unless the magic sky is going to open up and gold is going to fall, I don't know how you absorb or sustain this influx of people. I know they want to come, but they have to come orderly. We have to know who they are and whether or not they're willing to become citizens of whatever that country that they're
Look, going let's to. Add this, too.
Yeah.
To allow people into the country illegally is to allow them to be here having broken the law. And every society needs to be a society of law and order in a humane way, not in a harsh way. But to begin on that foot is already to set off in the wrong direction.
Mm-hmm. Gents, there is a group of Catholics, while we're talking about the election, who've certainly determined who they feel is the lesser of the evils this election season. A group billing itself as Catholics for Harris Waltz they held an organizing conference the other day, making their case of why Catholics can and should vote for Harris. This is Sister Simone Campbell of Nuns on the Bus fame. She's a lobbyist, a progressive nun. Listen to this.
I got a chance to meet Vice President Harris, and we had a lovely conversation about what mattered, about affordable health care and the health care issues that we had worked so hard on. I don't know if y'all can see the questions that people were asking. The big one's always Catholics and abortion. Drives me nuts. Drives me nuts. So how do we deal with it? What do we do? How can we handle this? The fact is, our faith does not require the outline of abortion. Our faith teaches us that protecting life is what we're about. And we also trust each individual to have a well-formed conscience for making decisions, in this case, for her well-being. And that a couple working together can make a good decision. When this complicated, stressful horror of a difficult pregnancy is dealt with.
Father, your reaction to Sister Campbell's depiction of abortion as a difficult pregnancy to deal with?
And I'm horrified that a Catholic religious sister would say that the Catholic faith does not require the outlawing of abortion. It absolutely does. Is she unfamiliar with the teaching of the Church over two millennia? The unjustified killing of any human being is wrong. When that occurs in the womb of the mother, it's called abortion. It's wrong. She gets mad that people bring up abortion. She's not mad about abortion. I mean, this is ridiculous. This is why we have a problem in the Catholic Church right now, that a religious woman who is supposed to represent the Church and how she teaches and lives is promoting legalized abortion. And she thinks that this is good. She talks about we want to help the community. She's obviously excluded from the community unborn children. That's cruel. That's the cruelty of this so-called progressive ideology, which views the powerful and living, those outside the womb who can walk around, they're the only ones that count. Our unborn brothers and sisters don't count. And of course, she always characterizes it in a way to try and make us feel bad. Oh, please don't get me upset by talking about abortion. By the way, Kamala Harris is definitely pro-abortion. She runs on it. She went to an abortion clinic the other day to say, give her support. This is clear. Kamala Harris means abortion in the United States on demand. Catholics should not be voting for abortion on demand. They should be voting for pro-life laws.
Bob, does the Catholic faith allow the moral flexibility on abortion that Sister Simone is talking about, that it does not require the outlawing of abortion?
I would say no. I would say absolutely no, because it requires us to protect all innocent human life, as Father was just saying. Look, the lie in what she in her statement is that these people have well-formed consciences to begin
right.
with. In fact, they have malformed consciences. They have malformed consciences that are like what liberal Democrats consider to be their consciences. And I trace this all back to a certain interpretation of Vatican II. Women of her age, she's about the age of Nancy Pelosi. Mm-hmm. Nancy Pelosi and some of her friends always used to talk about how God has given women, you know, the ability to make decisions on for their own, which is true. You know, women can be matured persons who decide important things. But like everybody else, women have to follow the moral law. They're free to decide how they're going to be doing that in certain circumstances. But abortion is never a moral choice. Now, if you want to talk about medically necessary interventions because a mother's life is at risk, or you know, when there's sometimes when there's an extreme problem with the baby, those are those difficult cases, which are very few. They are not the large, almost the entirety of what happens in abortion. Abortion is done for economic reasons. Women don't want any more children. What she is doing is lying, pure and simple. The church does, if you can read through the catechism, and you can find all sorts of different segments of the catechism making this argument. And Father rightly says, those politicians and those Catholic religious who make it possible to do this, they don't represent the church, and I think that they ought to be rejected politically as well as with inside the church.
Before we run out of time, I think we have like 3 minutes here. The Pope made reference to communist China on his plane ride back from Singapore. With Jimmy Lai still incarcerated, the Vatican-China Accord still secret, Pope Francis said this, and I'll translate for you. I am happy with the dialogue with China. The results are good. Even as far as the appointment of bishops is concerned, we are working with goodwill. The Secretariat of State has told me how things are going, and I am happy. For me, China is an illusion. I would like to visit China. Father, he went on to call China a great country he admires and respects. China has a capacity for dialogue and understanding, he said, that goes beyond other systems of democracy, end quote. Father, what limoncello are they serving on that plane, and how could the Pope say that stuff with a straight face?
No, I am heartbroken and sickened when I hear this statement that the current status of Vatican-Chinese relationships is good. The Chinese government is oppressing the Catholic Church in China. It holds Catholics in prison, such as Jimmy Lai. They created a diocese and appointed a bishop against the will of the Vatican. The Vatican conceded it later. They have requiring priests and bishops to belong to the Patriotic Association, which is a Communist Party entity. There is no religious freedom. Children can't be given religious instruction. The Pope cannot freely appoint bishops in China. The Chinese Catholic agreement is secret. Why is that? You know, the age of transparency, we ought to know what it is that we're getting in return for what we're giving to them.
Father, I want to get...
This is enraging.
I want to get Bob in on this. We have a minute left. They're renewing this Vatican-China agreement. The Catholic bishops are appointed without Catholic approval, as Father just mentioned. Bishops and priests are disappeared. Why renew this agreement? Is it just because I want to go visit? A papal visit?
Thomas Jefferson once said about slavery that it was like holding the ears of a wolf. You can't hang on and you can't let go. And I think that once you've entered into this, it's difficult to back off from it. Look, in addition to the appointment of bishops without consulting with the Vatican and then you know, kind of recreating a diocese, they're also imparting this cynicization on all religious groups, including Catholics. Mm-hmm. So you have to begin to interpret your faith in terms of the not just China, but the Chinese Communist Party. Mm-hmm. So just in the last few days, they've announced that Catholic priests are being, I would call it brainwashed, but they would call it trained in cynicization. They're even organizing pilgrimages to important points in the Chinese Communist Revolution.
Imagine. This is sick, but it should not be blessed.
Pilgrimages for priests, by the way.
Oh, my God. God help. We should pray for all the people, all of our brothers and sisters in China, including those we know by name and those we've never met. Gentlemen, we will leave it there. For commentary by Robert Royal and Father Gerald Murray, visit thecatholicthing.org. We will see, of course, Robert's commentary from Rome throughout the month, and we will convene the Synod Central very soon. Thank you, gents. He's a stand-up comic, a star of countless classic comedy movies, and former writer and Emmy-nominated cast member on Saturday Night Live. He's also become a crusader for free speech and the First Amendment. He's got a fascinating new memoir that touches on this very subject and much more. You Can Do It. Speak Your Mind, America. It hits bookstores September 24th. I sat down with him recently here in studio to talk about the book, his storied career, as well as his Catholic faith. Here's part one of my exclusive interview with Rob Schneider. You Can Do It opens with the most unbelievable intro I think I may have ever read.
And I've read a lot of intros.
And here's what it touches on. Filipino slurs, assorted profanities, gambling with Norm MacDonald, and Father Chad Ripperger. How do you put all that together, Rob?
I'm a new Catholic, so I'm coming at this in a as an older gentleman who also has had a wonderful gift of these beautiful children. And I have to be the guardian, and to be parents, not friends, but parents to these beautiful kids. And you want to raise them in something that is meaningful. And the thing that constantly is that you will hear about, like whether it's the former Soviet Union, whether it's North Korea, or whether it's China, is that godless tyranny, there is a hopelessness. And I will say that. There is a sadness and an emptiness that that children now are feeling that these young Generation Z has, and it is because of a godless society. So there is a hopelessness in that, and I really, really feel that if they could come closer to God and realize this great gift and to be the reflection that God calls us to be, God's reflection on us.
Well, somewhere in You Can Do It, I wrote this down the other night when I was reading the book. This is all a test for us, you write.
Yeah.
Unlike other belief systems and religions, say cancel culture, for example, that call upon their believers to hate and destroy their enemies, ours calls upon us to love our enemies. How is all of this a test, Rob?
It's the same reason that God put the apple in Eden, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, he could have made it just very... He could come down and show his hand right now.
Yeah.
But that wouldn't be loving. What's loving is to push your kids to not just watch TV and videos, and you can give them pizza all day. But if you love your children like God loves us, he wants to challenge us. He wants us to bring out our best, and he wants us to come to him of our own volition. And I think these tests are very loving. There's no accident that as soon as our kids are old enough, I don't know if we educate them correctly, but we push them to do it so that they can be challenged, and that's beautiful.
Yeah.
That's the most beautiful gift you can give.
Tell me about this revival of faith. I mean, I know your dad was Jewish, your mother was Filipina.
Yeah, so my mother was Catholic. I went to the old Bill Maher joke, when I went to confession, I bring my attorney. Father, this is Mr. Cohen, he'll be answering all our questions. It was always there. I mean, Jesus only lets you go so far before he comes like, aha, okay, right. That's enough.
I'm coming.
Yeah. And I do feel like you have, anytime there is as we all sense it now, there is a rise in evil in the world. Mm-hmm. It's not going to win, but it's being allowed to happen now, and it's purposeful. And it is we are some of the challenges that we're facing challenges in the family, we're facing challenges in the schools that our kids go to, we're facing challenges by our leaders. And how do we rise to that? And how do we bring out our best? How do we protect our children? Mm-hmm. And how do we, now, you know, congratulations, our nation's having problems. Now we can really decide what kind of nation we want, what kind of family we want, community, and what do we want how do we want to reflect God's love to the world and to each other?
You say in the book that there was an organized evil, I imagine connected in some way to the COVID shutdowns and the mandates, but an organized evil you talk about that presaged this conversion. What was that organized evil? What did it look like?
It is a power authoritarian grab, and like all power grabs, they become corrupt. And so what happened was, it was a continuation of trying to get more and more, and it's whether it's the pharmaceutical companies buying off every Republican, every Democrat in Congress, not just the federal level, but the state level, you really feel there is a crunch on freedom and that individual liberty. And it's evil. And I would say that, like, for you have to call that evil by its name. It is demonic. It is the lies. And the lies are coming. And it's a rise in evil. And as M. Scott Peck said to me many, many years ago, the great author of The Road Less Traveled, he said, if the devil exists, he's saying, don't make waves. Just don't become part of this. And I think it behooves us, and it asks us, and it demands us right now to make waves, to stand up for what's right. And this is a great opportunity that we have. So along with this Marxist communism, and communism is really just an attack on Christianity.
Yep.
That's what Karl Marx did. This was an assault on it, and he did group these ideas to go after. And what we're seeing now is a real attack on the family unit. There's an attack on mothers, fathers, women, children. And this is evil, and we have to call this what it is, and we need to be, it's a spiritual warfare that we're in. And if we don't acknowledge that, we're not going to be able to fight it sufficiently.
In your parish of Our Lady of Perpetual Help, you went to convert classes before. I mean, you didn't just come back to, you actually went through the process.
I was the oldest by 47 years of the in the class, and it's with my daughter, and it was beautiful. And the idea of coming at it from a new Catholic is really is beautiful, because, you know, like the priest was talking about last week at Mass, the idea of his followers, for Jesus's followers, were saying, like, they were weirded out by this idea of, this is my flesh,
right.
this is my blood.
Yeah.
So this is something that, like, a lot of Catholics take for granted. But, like, well, this is just a, no, but this isn't, can you imagine his followers say, this is, take this in memory of me.
Yeah.
This is my blood. And some of them go, like, I don't know, that's a little weird. So I really feel that these ideas and this stuff is fresh, and it really, and it's beautiful. And what it talks about is the sacrifice and love of this. And a beautiful thing that my father Paso said to me, which just made me tear up. He said, talking about salvation and talking about the sacrifice and what we need to sacrifice now, because speaking up and talking and protecting our families and our nation is important now. And he talked about the sacrifice of Jesus, and he said, even the cold breeze that the baby Jesus felt the night he was born is enough suffering for your salvation. And I was like, wow, how beautiful is that? How much more so, what does it cost to risk your career or potential job when you think about what we need to protect for our children? And our children are under attack now.
Yeah.
And the society demands that we stand up and be courageous.
I saw you talking to our pal Tucker recently about the power of the rosary.
Yeah,
Is this a new devotion?
I need this. Look at that rosary. I need this. This was just given to me.
Look at that. With the St. Benedict medal and all.
Yes.
Was this a devotion? Did your mother pray the rosary? Did your family pray
the rosary? No, my mother didn't, but my Patricia and I did it the other night. And when it was a lot of worldly pressure and tension, and it all dissipated so powerfully. The idea, because people talk about prayer, like, you got a prayer, and we get our prayers. But it's powerful.
Yeah.
I've felt the prayers of many people, but specifically, when you pray with another person, someone that you that love, and the greatest gift that Jesus has given to me is my beautiful wife, Patricia, and those gorgeous kids. And we prayed together, and I felt a sense of peace for days. I mean, for the next day. And you have to know that is really powerful. And I never really felt that before.
Will this refound faith at all change the stand-up act? I've seen your stand-up act.
Yes.
It's a little, look.
I know.
It's closer to Carlin than, you know, Mother Teresa.
It is. I talked to my priest about it, and, you know, and I said, you know, Father, you know, I have a stand-up act, and it's pretty dirty. He said, well, you may have to think about it. You know, I'll give an Irish voice just because it sounds better for the routine. He said, well, you may have to think about that, young man. You know, and I said, you know, to make it do the right thing. And he said, but it's pretty funny. Well, yeah, but you're either serving the Lord or you're serving the world. And I said, yeah, you know the right choice to make. I said, you're right. I said, I don't know if I'll be able to give as much money to the church. And he said, you got to make the people laugh, Robbie. You've got to make them laugh, Robbie. If you don't, that's your gift.
Well, if you're asking my opinion, Rob, you can do it.
Oh, thank
you.
You
can do it. But look. I think it's a comedy club. People, there's a certain segment of the audience that is going to expect some edge.
I am changing it. Thank you. I am changing it. And
I have
to make an adaption. But at the same time, I think that it's important to, and that's the thing about Catholicism now, and why the outreach and why there's such growth right now, is because we have to reach out to everyone.
Yeah.
We need to bring people to the church. And for whatever reason is happening now, I don't know why I'm thrust into this place, but I said, turn over to God, whatever I'm supposed to do, then please let me know. And so it's important to reach out and bring people to the faith.
Well, and let's talk about the role of the comedian in that. I mean, obviously, priest has his role, laymen have their role. What's the role of the comedian in society today? You spend a lot of time, and you can do it, talking about that critical role. And I've said it for years, the last truth tellers left are comedians right now.
Well, I would say just Christianity was a subversive underground thing where it's like, hey, there's this...
the way.
Yeah. Did you know about this? And I remember the first time I was exposed to Christianity was in born-again Christianity when I was 13. And I remember being around these people go, why are these people so happy? What do they got? What's happening with them? Mm-hmm. That was an interest in it. What stand-up and what comedy has the ability to do in the same way, to subvert people through laughter, to bring them to a point of reason, to a point of rationale, and a point of forgiveness. And I didn't realize that last part until recently. And when I wrote this book, a lot of it was still very angry about, and I have to be careful about that because the real tenet is forgiveness. And forgiveness isn't just for the other person, it's for yourself. You have to let go, and I didn't understand the concept, just like I didn't understand the concept of how powerful prayer was. I didn't understand the concept of turning it over to God. I just thought these things are just said. I didn't realize the power behind it. It liberates you. And I think that good laughter, jokes can liberate people.
But there became a point. Look, you've got Richard Pryor, and you've got Carlin, and you've got all these great, Dave Chappelle, Chris Rock, yourself.
Soothsayers.
Well, people were looking, you mentioned it, in the rearview mirror of the culture. Yeah. So that you're kind of casting back on the people what they're living through. And yeah, they're laughing at it, but they're also internalizing it in a different way. But yes. When did comedians start throwing rocks, not at the powerful, but at the people?
What happens is there is this idea that somehow they're, and the Democratic Party is not alone in this, but the idea that somehow they are the trodden upon, that they are the ones in power. And so they're the ones that are really attacking the people, and they're attacking freedom. And that is something that is, it's an inverse, and it is a critical error on their part. And if they lose the election, it'll be because of that. So the idea was, and the attack on during COVID was to attack small businesses. And it was for real authoritarian, you have to say these are bad people. When Gavin Newsom closes churches and keeps open strip clubs and weed stores and liquor stores, but closes the church, at that point you have to go, thank you for being so openly honest and hostile towards God and towards people, that you would take away this solace that people needed at that terrible time. The thing about Satan, the thing about the devil, and the thing about evil is it, at its core, it has to expose itself, and it has to. And so you see it, and you go, okay, well, that's evil.
Right.
So it makes it more obvious. And in these times, which I think we have a rise of evil, and it's not going to go away anytime soon, just like it happened 100 years ago in Europe. I will say this, the hope for the world is the United States. And that's why it's important that we've got to draw the line here, because there will be no Marshall Plan for the United States. There's no Marines from some other country going to land here. There will be no food drop. This is it. This is the final stand, not just for the United States, but for the world, for freedom. So whether problems we have, whatever, we cannot let this current administration continue to undermine us and make it more dangerous here so that we can allow these this Marxist regime to take over. And believe me, that's a real threat. I don't think it'll win.
You know what? I was stunned to read that you almost left stand-up, or you weren't going to go back to it. And then you spoke to Chris Rock.
Chris Rock was, because Adam Sandler was always telling me to do it. But he loves me, and he's my brother, and he's just like, he's worried about me financially. He said, no, you should go back at that. But when Chris Rock says, you know, he told me, he said, you could be the best at this. And I said, oh, yeah, but I don't even, thank you, but I don't even know what I would talk about. And he said, just talk about what you talk to me every morning. So he's one of those wonderful, real liberals who supports freedom, supports ideas, and supports this, and has a great faith for what this country offers, which is opportunity. And and he really is one of the masters. He's the guy who changed modern comedy. So I really took him seriously. And I said, I don't know if I could do it. And then he came up to me and he nudged me. He knew how I engaged. He said, you know what I think? I said, what? I think you don't like money. And I went like, all right. So there's money. He said, yeah, there's money. What are you, stupid? What are you? And so thank you, Chris, for that. And I will say it's reopened my career and it's opened my eyes and it's got me to meet many people to make me realize that, like, you know, the problem of New York and Los Angeles is you can get caught in your own echo chamber and you don't realize the ramifications for the you know the garbage that's cranked out in the liberal media that doesn't represent most of this country and doesn't help most of the country.
Stay tuned for the full World Over interview with Rob on Thursday, October 3rd. We'll play the whole thing for you, and it's really a hoot. That is all the time we have for now. Next week, I'll be joined by actor-director David Henry. Until then, we'll be scouting the world over for all that is seen and unseen. On behalf of the staff and crew of EWTN News, thank you for watching. I'm Raymond Arroyo. Bye now.